On this week's program, in the news, we'll find out how taxpayers scored a victory when legislators got too greedy. We'll hear about a bizarre admonition from Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin. And we'll check in on the city of Austin and why they're spending $500 million on a wood chipper. In our interview, we talked to Tracy Marshall with Transparency Texas about five myths about money and politics. And Empower Texan CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan will close us out with this week's commentary. Welcome back, Lone Star Patriots, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. Lots of good articles up there. Speaking of good articles up at texasscorecard.com, I've got one this week from Kerry Cheshire, Vice President for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Thanks for joining me, Kerry.
Glad to be here, Tony.
So, wanted to talk about this issue, kind of a upbeat story, pretty funny, how legislators' greed at the end of the most recent legislative session worked to taxpayers' advantage for a change.
Well, that's right, Tony. Of course, most conservatives are a little bit frustrated by the results of the legislative session, where a number of pro-taxpayer reforms didn't make it across the finish line. But here we're actually talking about an anti-taxpayer reform that didn't make it across the finish line.
So victory in that something bad failed to pass.
That's about right. The long and short of this issue is that there's something called the Major Events Trust Fund, and that's a taxpayer-funded fund administered by the governor of the state of Texas that really doles out a lot of tax dollars to favored entities that come and do business in Texas. So if the Super Bowl were to come to Texas, if the World Series were to come to Texas, most of those are big events, but you could also have, you know, the International Hair Braiding Conference come to Texas and right. Get some tax revenue to do it.
Yeah, and the idea here is creating business activity. It's creating tax revenue, so we're going to incentivize these things to come here. The criticism has been they were going to come here anyway.
Yeah, the criticism is they're going to come here anyway. And when you actually do the math of the economic activity that they generate, it's often a losing deal for taxpayers.
Yeah, so here's where legislators were during the session. They wanted to add some new entities to this, and they got so greedy that they couldn't reach an agreement, basically.
That's right. So State Senator Jay Nelson was carrying this piece of legislation to add an event up at the Texas Motor Speedway up in Tarrant County.
NHRA Fall Nationals.
That's right. She's trying to add that. Meanwhile, John Frullo's got a bill to make this Formula One race at the Circuit of the Americas retroactively eligible. The long and short of that story is last fall, they were required to submit a "we're going to oppose human trafficking at this event" plan in order to get some cash. They didn't do so, and they lost out on $25 million of public money.
And so they were, even though they failed, and that's an interesting element in and of itself, the human trafficking element, but basically both sides wanted to put extra money into the hands of these racetrack organizations.
Right. Both sides wanted to do that. And then on top of that, Democrats and Republicans organized to make a conference honoring Nelson Mandela up in Dallas County eligible as well. And ultimately, they ended up fighting amongst themselves, recognizing, hey, there's only a limited pot of taxpayer money we can dole out. They couldn't agree on which ox to gore and which pocket to pad.
European F1, do we do drag racing, or do we do Nelson Mandela events? Couldn't reach an agreement. The whole bill explodes. Nothing passes.
That's right. And taxpayers end up not forking out additional cash.
Well, it's a victory for taxpayers. Good story there. How greed worked in our favor this time.
Absolutely. And it's the way our founding fathers designed the system, finally working for taxpayers.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capital Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. We just finished up the most recent legislative session. There's still some stories coming out of that, though. Most specifically, yeah. I'm interested in this story about Speaker Dennis Bonin coming out saying, hey, I don't want Republicans campaigning against Democrats in the upcoming elections.
Yeah, well, the legislature's finally out of town. Their 140-day session is done. Won't be back until probably January of 2020. 2021. But unless, of course,
the governor were to call special. I mean, that's the thing.
Of course.
I mean, take us down a rabbit trail here. People are upset with what happened. The governor, Governor Abbott, could call a special session at any time on any of these
issues.
Just
about anything, yeah.
Yeah, so that's possible, but we don't expect that to happen. But anyway, back to it. Let's talk about this story about Bonham.
In the wake of the session ending, though, you had Speaker Dennis Bonham, the Speaker of the Texas House. This was his first session. Saying some comments that I think are giving a lot of Republicans in the legislature and Republicans across the state, frankly, some pause, saying that he's going to punish, those are his words, he's going to punish members who campaign against other incumbent members in the House. And now, at first it seemed like, well, okay, maybe he's talking about people getting involved in primary elections. We've seen some of that in the past few years. But no, it's regardless of party. And so if you're a Republican in, say, Dallas County, and you want to help out an effort to take back some of those seats that were lost to keep the majority and maybe build a majority, Republican majority, you can't do that. Speaker Dennis Bonin's going to punish you.
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's just such a bizarre thing. I mean, one of the things that we saw this session with this new regime, we've always had a problem in, I think, government generally. You see it in Congress, but you definitely have seen this in the Texas House of Representatives. Is this club-like atmosphere. It's all a club. We're all part of a club. We have to protect each other from who? From the voters, right? And from outside groups, outside forces. So it's like a club. That's been a problem for a long time. That problem got worse, I think, this session, and this is real evidence of that.
Well, exactly. I mean, and here's the funny part, too, is okay, so this admonishment's going out to Republicans. You think about it in that way. But he says it goes to both parties. Does anybody believe that Democrats are not going to be out there campaigning not only against President Trump in 2020, but also to take back the legislature? I mean, they've got this opportunity where they could possibly end up doing that in the next election. Does anybody think that the Democrat members of the legislature are going to heed Bonin's warning on
this? Yeah, I mean, first of all, I've got a philosophical problem with this club-like atmosphere, this attitude of, oh, we're all part of a club. We need to protect each other to remain members of this club. I mean, that's screwy to begin with. But I also just don't believe typically what we've seen in the legislature is if there's rules, the rules apply to the Republicans and are applied by the Republicans to other Republicans.
Right.
They are not applied to the Democrats. You know, the Democrats are going to be out there campaigning to try and win a majority in the House. And what, right? You know, the Republicans are going to unilaterally disarm?
Exactly. And under Speaker Bonin's new rule here, it looks like Republicans are going to have an even more difficult time taking more control of the legislature.
What a wild story, Brandon. Now let's turn and talk to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau. Jacob, whenever you think that the legislature has a monopoly on bad policy— We come to you because you cover the city of Austin. And anytime that there's bad ideas happening, I mean, the city of Austin can sometimes take the cake. So you've got this story about this biomass boondoggle. Tell us about this. It's a perfect example of things going wrong.
Oh, Tony,
local government.
Austin's been winning the bad idea award for years on end. But so this boondoggle is the Austin City Council recently spent a whopping $500 million to buy a biomass plant out in East Texas, a plant they had already spent over $100 million to build and $54 million for the past 6 years to operate. So gobs of money going into this thing.
Okay, so three-quarters of $1 billion basically on a biomass? What does that even mean? What is a biomass?
It's basically a wood shredder.
Okay.
it takes shredded wood and burns it for fuel.
Okay.
Or electricity, rather.
Okay, and so they're buying this thing, right? They're buying it to mothball it, right?
Essentially. Okay, so the story traces back to 2008 when Austin utility manager Roger Duncan had an idea to achieve the city's renewable energy goals. Now, he wanted to build this biomass plant and then buy all the energy from it.
So the green energy plan of 2008-2009 was to burn wood for fuel. Okay.
Yeah, so even though we figured out a while ago that wasn't as efficient.
Yeah, right. So that's what they do in, like, you know, people living in huts in Africa burn wood for fuel. So, all right, continue.
Yeah, so he had this plan, and a wide range of people, environmentalists, good government advocates, were like, this is bad. Like, okay, the details, it was not thoroughly vetted. But despite that, city council approved it unanimously a month after it was made public.
Okay. So with a month of debate back in 2008, they entered this deal to buy electricity from a wood chipper plant in East Texas. This is the Green New Deal of the first decade of this century. And now it's such a bad deal that they're buying the plant in order to shut it down.
No, Tony, so here's the best part. Over the years that unfolded since the deal, the plant only produced energy for 2 months.
Oh my gosh.
And now, with 10 years left still on the deal, they've already poured hundreds and hundreds of millions into it. They're like, well, we got to get out of this contract. It's too expensive to operate this plant. Let's just buy it for $500 million.
And so they're buying it now, and
it will likely be torn down.
No, they'll tear it down and shut it down. What an amazing story. Thanks for your reporting on that.
Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome back on the program Tracy Marshall, with one of my favorite organizations, TransparencyTexas.org. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony. I love coming in.
So let's give listeners out there maybe not familiar with who y'all are, kind of 10,000-foot view, basically exposing the connections between money and power in Texas politics.
Right. So we're a nonpartisan group, but we just show on our site, you can see every dollar coming from every donor in Texas, every candidate, where they're getting their money, where they're spending it, and same thing for every PAC. So trying to just make it easy for citizens to see exactly where the money's coming from and where it's going.
So. Yeah, so you're basically taking a lot of data that, it's this public campaign finance data that's out there, but putting it together in a way where people can actually look at it and they can say, okay, well, who's the biggest donor
right.
to some candidate, that sort of thing.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of times you look at sites like this and you would assume, okay, they're exposing the money in politics. They must be against people, you know, being involved in politics, spending money in campaigns, that sort of thing. But that's not the truth. You've got a great series of articles about five myths about money in politics. I wanted to talk about those, kind of some of the takeaways that y'all have seen looking at all of this data. And what are some of these myths that we need to be addressing and rebutting?
Right. I mean, this is not the typical thing we do. We're generally just about exposing the money in Texas politics. But after spending several years just digging into the data, it became very obvious that a lot of these tropes that you hear out there all the time about money in politics, they just aren't backed up by the data. And so it just really kind of almost wrote itself out of the data.
So myth number one, too much is
right.
The myth is there's too much money in politics.
Right.
So can you address that?
You hear that all the time. And honestly, a lot of these other myths kind of fall out of that principle that you hear. But there's a lot of money in politics. Like, if you look on the front page of our site, we have these tickers that spin up. And in the last cycle, just on Texas candidates alone, Texans donated $493 million, and those candidates and PACs in turn spent about $630 million. So, I mean, that's a lot of money, right? But it matters. Like, context matters. A lot of money compared to what? So that's Texas dollars, but so if you compare that Texas spending to, say, what the legislature is going to spend in
right.
this session, that is less. The amount that Texans spent to influence their legislature in this session is less than 1% of what the legislature will spend.
Yeah, so the overall budget was like something like $240 billion
right.
That's being spent by the government. Here we have
$493 million spent to try to influence that. So if you think about that, that's actually a really good deal.
Yeah.
And then if you compare it to an even more interesting statistic.
Or a really bad deal where you're not spending enough to influence that, and then you're getting a bad deal.
Because you're not speaking out enough about what citizens want to go on in Austin. So yeah, so maybe there's not enough spending. And if you compare the amount of money that is spent on politics in Texas to our Texas gross state product, like how much Texans are producing in the same time period, it's less than 0.01%. So it's this infinitesimal amount of money that Texans are spending out of what Texans are producing to influence their government, their tax dollars.
Which can have a tremendous impact on their ability to produce,
on their
personal freedom, on all of these things.
One of my favorite statistics along these lines, Tony, is on the federal level. People say this all the time, there's too much money in politics, but statistically, Americans spend more on potato chips every year than they do on politics.
Yeah, I saw an article, I think, last year, and I don't remember the number, but it was Americans spent more on Halloween costumes for their pets. Right. And it was the number was very similar to some political spending number. So, so the corollary. So let's get to myth number two here. And it grows out of myth number one.
Right.
The idea that we need to have campaign contribution limits.
Right. And more disclosures on campaign spending. So that's a very popular thing you hear a lot. And really what that's getting at is this concern that the big mega donors, the fat cats, are buying votes. So, but when you look at it, there's a study, a really interesting study. Actually, the lead researcher was out of UT Austin here, and he actually found that in general, the political dollars follow a candidate who already has an ideology that they like, rather than the candidate being bought off to take on the ideology of the donor.
Yeah, my friend Kerry Cheshire, the Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, points this out. A lot of times the left will say, oh, well, so-and-so, this Republican, is bought and paid for by the NRA. The NRA has bought this, as if the NRA were not there donating money to candidates. This guy would just be totally pro-gun control.
Right.
And he's like, come on, Bloomberg has more money than the NRA, right? You know, he himself has more money
than
all the NRA, you know, donors combined. You know, if the people are bought and paid, go buy him, right? If he's for sale, go buy him, right?
There are higher bidders. Out there, right?
So you're saying, no, the money actually follows ideology and ideas, and you're seeing a pairing of donor with a politician, not a buying of a politician with the money.
And what has happened is the Supreme Court has recognized that political giving is political speech. And if you think about it, I mean, it makes sense. Like, right, if you didn't have, this is political speech, what you do every week, day in and day out. But if you didn't have dollars to pay for these microphones or your salary, then you wouldn't be able to do this political speech. So it's pretty easy to understand how one is related to the other. And if you think about it, though, Tony, you and I, we do politics day in and day out. But most people out there, they have a life, right?
Sure, yeah.
And
we hope.
And their number one way to speak out, besides voting, is typically to write a check. And so they don't have time to go volunteer here and there to do this with their lives. So for most citizens, besides voting, their number one way to get involved politically is to donate to someone. And what you see a lot with the people who say, no, we need to put caps on spending. You shouldn't be able to give that much of your money. Of your voluntary dollars, you shouldn't be able to give that much. It really makes me mad because most of the people who say that have a public platform. Like they're either a media personality, they're a social media celebrity, they're a university official, they're someone who has a public platform. And what I think effectively they're saying is, I get to talk, I've got this platform, I can say all the political speech I want, and you, the citizen, you shut up.
Yeah.
You have a limit on how much you can speak.
Yeah. Or go buy, yeah. We're going to cap you at $2,700 giving to a candidate. If you want to go buy a radio station,
then you can talk as much as I can.
Go buy a radio station if you want to compete with me.
With me. Yeah. So it just, it's unfair. And if you look at it, it's actually the government deciding when citizens have spent enough of their own money to speak politically back to hold the government accountable.
Let's move to myth number three. We saw this with Beto, you know, out there. Oh, I'm not taking any PAC money. Right. So the myth, no corporate PAC money, shouldn't accept any of that. Let's talk a little bit about that myth.
That's an interesting one. In fact, that's kind of the darling favorite myth of every Democrat presidential candidate so far has sworn off corporate PAC money. And increasingly, we're seeing Republicans start to swear off PAC money, too. But here's the deal. They get those dollars. What typically happens is they get those same dollars or they get even more of those dollars, even though they're not taking PAC money. So the idea is, like, I'm the ethical one here. I'm not going to take corporate PAC money because I don't want to look like I'm being bought off by these big evil corporations. But you mentioned Beto, so let's use him as an example. He's a great example.
Sure.
So part of his stump speech, everywhere he appears, is I'm not taking PAC money. Well, there's a PAC called J Street PAC out of D.C., and what they did is they gathered conduit contributions from him. So J Street PAC did not write Beto a check. If they had written Beto a check, the maximum they could have given him is $5,000. So he says, no, J Street PAC, I'm going to take your money.
I don't want your $5,000.
I don't want your $5,000. Instead, J Street endorses him and puts a link on their website where citizens can go and donate to Beto through the link. Then they also host a big party, invite people, and collect contributions for Beto. And from those two things, the link on their website, the party they hosted, they took in more than $170,000 for Beto. So he turned down the $5,000, takes the moral high ground, and instead collects more than $170,000.
Well, this is a little bit of what I've seen in campaign finance is, you know, you squeeze, it's like a balloon animal, right? You squeeze one end of it, and then it kind of just balloons
it
out on the other end,
right?
And so, okay, well, we're not going to do PAC. Okay, well, then we're going to raise $150,000 from a collection of people.
Right.
They might as well, why don't they just put their money in a PAC? And then that's, you know, it's the same thing.
And what's interesting is that PAC money, the corporate PAC money is not money coming out of the corporate coffers. It's limited. It's by employees who voluntarily make the donations, and it's all recorded at the FEC.
Yeah. Let's talk about myth number four, and we got to move through these a little quicker. Myth number four, dark money should be exposed.
Yeah.
This dark money, this is this left label, really. It's to demonize.
Right.
Anonymous, you know, private donations to independent groups.
Right. So what's really interesting about dark money is in the last election cycle, you do tend to hear that more from the left. Like, we've got to expose dark money, this evil dark money. But in the last election cycle, the left, there was more dark money coming out of the left than there was out of the right. So kind of interesting. But so, yeah, dark money is these groups that are education groups, advocacy groups.
Something like the NRA, right? Here's a group that advocates for an issue, but also might put out a publication that says, well, I also endorse this candidate.
Right. So you've got groups, these kind of groups on the left and the right. On the right, you might have the NRA. You might have Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. On the left, you might have Planned Parenthood and LGBTQ rights groups. So these are not groups on one side of the spectrum or the other, but they're groups that advocate. So what the law has said is we're going to come in and we don't want to allow vote buying. So we're going to kind of find a balance. If you give money straight to a PAC or directly to a candidate, then that money has to be, the donors have to be disclosed, the amounts, the dates, all that.
When there's a contribution.
When there is a contribution directly to a candidate or a PAC. Now, if you're with advocating for a group, like those kinds of groups I just mentioned, then you have a right to privacy. And so it comes from this whole idea, like, we've had a long history of privacy in the United States. We vote in private. Common sense pamphlets that advocated for the revolution were in private.
Yeah.
And it was enshrined in law.
Pseudonyms and all those kind
of
things.
Yes. It was enshrined in law in the 1950s when the state of Alabama was trying to force the NAACP to release the names of their donors because they, frankly, wanted to harass them.
Yeah, I mean, and use violence and intimidate and try and basically run the NAACP out of Alabama.
Exactly.
They wanted to use that data. And that's what we've seen with this, where you have...
continue to see it.
Where you have exposure of donors to private organizations. It gets exposed. Why? So that those people can be harassed.
Right.
That's basically the end result.
So my bottom line on dark money is I would say if someone says we need more transparency, I think you say yes, but you say transparency for who? Transparency for the government is a great thing.
Yeah.
Citizens involved in the political process have a right
and
to privacy.
And their private lives don't need more transparency. Right. All right, myth number five, and this is a really big one. Mm-hmm. We're happy warriors, have a positive outlook on things. The myth is you can't make a difference.
Right, right.
It's a myth, thankfully.
Thankfully, and it's the most insidious one of all. But you see this a lot, because the more people talk about dark money swirling around and these mega donors buying outcomes and buying elections, I think the average citizen and the average donor thinks, well, you know, I can't make a difference here. But it's just not, thankfully, that's not borne out in the facts. So the facts show that every candidate loves to bag a mega donor, right? They love that.
Sure.
But what they're watching, and what is one of the number one predictors of success on election day, is the number of individual donations. There is a very, very strong correlation between the number of individual donors and success on election day, because if you are willing to open up your wallet and write a check, you're very likely to show up and actually vote and even tell your friends.
Yeah.
And so candidates really care about that. And in fact, in the last election cycle, 98% of donations in Texas were for less than $1,000. So there's a lot of small dollar donors getting involved. Candidates care about it. And that together makes up more than a third of all the money in politics. So the small donors together make a difference. Second thing I'd say is your time matters. People think, I don't own a radio station, so what can I do to help? But another study by some Yale professors showed that a very effective, in fact, probably the most effective way to help a campaign is good old-fashioned block walking.
Yeah, going door to door, talking to neighbors, that sort of thing. It isn't just the money. I mean, the money facilitates the connections with voters. So if you can connect with voters without the money, it's...
Then all the better.
All the better. Right. That's right.
Good old-fashioned human contact.
Well, this is great. I appreciate you coming on and telling us about these. The article's up there at TransparencyTexas.org.
Check them out.
Yeah, so folks want to connect with you, the website, TransparencyTexas.org.
That's right. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Transparency Texas, too. So check it out.
Thanks, Tracy. I appreciate you coming on.
Yep. Have a great day.
You know, they say fear is the greatest motivator, but fear of what? Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan touches on that in this week's commentary.
Fear is powerful. Improperly applied, fear can cause us to make irrational choices without thinking. It can also, in the words of the book of Proverbs, be the beginning of wisdom. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. The difference is found in what we fear. Sticking with Proverbs 9:10 for a moment, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, we're told. Scripture is replete with examples, though, of the foolishness of man, individuals, prophets, and even disciples often making the mistake of fearing men more than God. A healthy fear is critical in all aspects of life. And frankly, it's very easy, though, to start fearing the wrong things. I've come to believe that what underlies many of our problems in American politics is too little fear. That is, too little fear by the politicians of the voters and taxpayers. As evidenced by their performance during the course of the 140-day legislative session, most politicians in the Texas legislature very clearly fear the retributions of lobbyists and bureaucrats more than the taxpayers. Were this not so, for example, they would have rushed to end the corporate welfare programs opposed by both parties and large majorities of citizens, rather than find new ways to get the taxpayers' cash to their cronies. The fault rests with us. As citizens, we've failed to inspire sufficient fear in our elected officials. We've allowed them to think that they, rather than we, are the masters of this republic. Too many citizens failed to even participate in elections, and even fewer bother to take the steps necessary to hold politicians accountable for their actions and inactions. The downward spiral of cause and effect blur, with the result being lawmakers who don't sufficiently fear the citizenry. The good news is it's never over. What I've learned is opportunities for citizens to reclaim their rightful place as sovereign leaders in our republic springs fresh with every act of participation. It's up to us as citizens to inspire in our elected servants greater fear than the lobby and the bureaucracy. Rather than accept table scraps, we as citizens must unwaveringly expect that politicians seek our approval and our approval alone. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. Join us here next week as we break down the release of this session's Fiscal Responsibility Index. See where your legislators stand on fiscal and role of government issues. See you next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.